Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Bustin' Loose Baseball, episode 217. You'll hear from Paul Taboni as he joined Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan live in studio. We'll have his two segments on the radio for you coming up at the end of this pod. Also want to react to the front office changes that have come down over the last couple of days. A tough day for a lot of people in the Nationals organization on Wednesday. We'll talk about that and more here on Bustin' Loose Baseball, episode 217, which starts right now.
Bustin' Loose Baseball, hosted by Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer, gives you in-depth analytics and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital. Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
It is Bustin' Loose Baseball. Make sure to tell your friends to check out BLB. We'll drop a couple of pods every week throughout the offseason to give you some player breakdowns as well as reacting to news going on around the ball club. And we had the privilege this week of catching up with Paul Taboni. We'll have that for you in just a couple of minutes. But Grant, a tough week for the Nationals and for a lot of people in the front office as they move off of assistant general manager Mark Shalaba, as well as Eddie Longo's the farm director and numerous scouts. It does sound like Mike DiBartolo is going to stick in the organization, but your reaction to some of the front office changes that Paul Taboni has made in his first real moves as the president of baseball operations?
Yeah, you bring in a new president of baseball ops for a reason, Toby. And this is a team dating back to 2019 that hasn't made the playoffs, hasn't won enough. And so there's going to be significant change. We knew that when Mike Rizzo got fired, when they decided to have an external search, which was a necessity. There's going to be a lot of new faces in the front office, all the way down to the minor league coaching staffs, you know, helping with the amateur scouting and player development departments. And there should be. They haven't won enough. It's a results business. But I am very much a proponent of acknowledging this is a business about people, right? Sports are about people. And a lot of good people are losing their jobs. And I mean good human beings, right? But also people that were really good at their jobs, potentially. Like, you've been to a restaurant where they don't serve well, or maybe the food isn't great. Doesn't mean every employee there isn't great. You know, there might be a fantastic waiter or an excellent chef or someone at the front of the house who does a nice job. And that's the case in baseball operations too. But they're in a clean house largely, and it's going to be a bit of a bloodbath. And there's going to be a lot of people losing gigs. I mean, notably, we know of a couple of names that were assistant general managers. Mark Shalaba, who'd been with the org since 06, who's, you know, just a terrific guy and really, really good baseball man. And Eddie Longos, who was a young ascending member of this organization, who took over as the director of player development over the last couple of years, who started as a full-timer in 2011 as a D.C. area kid who grew up and went to school in the district. So, you know, you hate to see guys like that that have put in a lot of long hours, done a lot of good work for the organization out. But this is a sea change, obviously. And Paul Taboni is going to build this in his image, as he should be allowed to. And you'll hear him talking about some of the decisions he's made, some that he's still going to make from a lengthy conversation, as you said, we had with him, that people will hear for the first time on the pod today.
Yeah, and I, like you mentioned, I think those guys that we've specifically mentioned with Shalaba and Longo has both of them been really good to us and really great dudes. The curious thing here, and I think we'd, you know, alluded to this when Taboni was hired about what he was going to do with the front office, was DiBartolo being the interim general manager. Sounds like he's going to stick around in the organization. Unclear what that role is going to be, whether it's, you know, just keeping that general manager role while Taboni's the guy still in charge as the president of baseball ops. We'll figure that out as time goes on. But regardless, DiBartolo sticking in the organization, I think that's a positive. We talked about wanting to have some continuity, understanding of the organization and where there were flaws, where their strengths were too, but understanding where the flaws were so that they can kind of iron out some of the kinks and get this thing going in the right direction. So what's your reaction to DiBartolo sticking around?
It's a good question. I think it's a no-brainer of sorts in some ways. I mean, I'm a big believer in institutional knowledge, not just because, again, you can have helpful people who do a good job in bad organizations that are losing, but also because they know the positives and the negatives. Who better can tell you about shortcomings within the organization than Mike DiBartolo, who's been there since 2012 or whatever it is, and who can tell you about working with the learners and how to, you know, ask for things and what they're going to be willing to talk about and not willing to talk about than someone who's been next to Rizzo as he's made requests for years and then did it himself over the last several months. So I think for all those reasons, it makes a lot of sense to keep him around. I also just think he is very much a fit with the direction that they're going to go. He is an analytics-driven guy. He is an R&D guy. I think that's the mold with which they're going to build this thing. They're going to also be, you know, an organization that believes in and cares about scouting. But I think if you're talking about like a scale or a pendulum, which way does it lean? Which way does it swing? I think it'll be a little bit more newer school, kind of newfangled with analytics and R&D maybe than old school scouting. So I think DiBartolo works there. And maybe he doesn't get the GM title right away. You know, maybe you kind of keep him as your assistant or whatever, you know, that looks like. And over the course of the year, you kind of see what's what and how things are trending. And if it goes really well, maybe, you know, that there's an opportunity then for a promotion and he becomes your general manager. He could externally bring somebody in and name him general manager. And DiBartolo is the assistant to that person. But, you know, it sounds like from, you know, all the people I've talked to, Mike is very excited about the direction. I think they're going to do a lot of the things probably that he's been clamoring for a long, long time under Rizzo. And for himself over the last several months as the acting general manager. So I'll bet while a lot of his buddies are out and a lot of people he's worked with and has great rapport with, this is also really refreshing and is as much for you and I, Toby, as this is like a breath of fresh air. I think for a guy like him and some of the people in that analytics department, which I bet gets affected a lot less than the scouting side will, if I had to make a guess here, I'll bet you they're really excited about, you know, the new way forward, even though it's a very, very sad day, you know, just because your friends are losing jobs.
Yeah, I'm curious, too, you know, with Toboni, he seems like a guy that isn't afraid to put his name on stuff. He kind of mentioned as such with the interview we're going to play here in just a couple of moments. But I also feel like he might be more collaborative than Mike Rizzo was in terms of allowing some of the guys in the organization to be able to make some things happen and, you know, working together, not doing anything freelancing, obviously, but just kind of working together with his guys. Not to say that Rizzo didn't, but I think he's just strikes me as a guy. I'm curious to see how that ends up working out. But seeing what DiBartolo was able to do as the interim general manager, I mean, that's a pretty easy sell when, you know, you're talking to DiBartolo if you're DiBartolo and he's kind of asking why should you stick around and you just say, look at what I did in the half season that I was here and rebuilding the bullpen and some of the moves I was able to make at the deadline and how the draft turned out. So he had a good half season to kind of put his stamp on things, and I think he did a good enough job that obviously it worked out for him to stick around in the organization. I think it's good for someone that's been around as long as DiBartolo has, that's had the role that he's had, and then ultimately was sitting in the similar type of chair that DiBartolo was sitting in to stick around and give him some help as he goes through his first couple of years and understanding what this organization is. So I think it was a smart move to keep him around.
So I think that's a great point. I was actually thinking about something today too, driving home after we talked with DiBartolo on the show, which was, you know, I think when DiBartolo gets to operate as a GM for as long as he did, which was through the draft and through the trade deadline. Remember, they made a trade with Boston, the Nathaniel Lowe deal. So if you're DiBartolo, you got a great relationship, obviously, with Breslow, who runs the Red Sox, who worked with the DiBartolo and the staff on that deal. I think you could tap into him and say, hey, what was that negotiation like? And what did you think of DiBartolo in that role? And, you know, how did he operate? And what were his, you know, I think you can get some really good insight and intel that you might not normally be able to get. I also think, you know, he was heavily involved in the draft, as we've talked about, with Boston and running the amateur side and being involved in their draft. And so he scouted a lot of the guys that Washington ended up taking in the draft. So in a sense, you're able to get a real feel for, when you talk to Mike, okay, what'd your board look like? Why'd you guys take Eli Willits? What'd you think about this player? Why did you push this player, you know, down a couple rounds and pay him or whatever it is? And I just think that you're able to compare notes a little bit. And if you like
how someone thinks, or if they did a couple things, let's just say I'm making this up, but if you're a big believer in Eli Willits and they had the stones to take him at one, when it would have been a lot easier to call Kate Anderson or Jackson Holiday, Ethan Holiday, Jackson's little brother's name, you know, at the top of the board, like, you know, maybe that gives him a check mark in the column. So I just think there's more opportunity to kind of get a feel for him than had he have never gotten that interim opportunity. And you're just inheriting this guy that you don't really know a whole lot about. He's been working in anonymity. So that's something I've been thinking about. But yeah, I think people around baseball have for a long time said nice things about DeBartolo because he's done a lot of hard, good work without really any fanfare, kind of in the shadows, so to speak. And I think those are the types of people you need in your organization for sure.
We'll let you hear that conversation in just a moment, but Grant, I'd had the opportunity to meet Toboni over at his introductory press conference, was really, really impressed. You didn't have that opportunity, but you got to meet him for the first time in studio today. What were your impressions on him? We'll get your observations of what he had to say after the interviews played, but what did you make of just him, the person, and getting to talk to him and chat with him in the studio?
I really was impressed. He meets you and he shakes your hand and he kind of looks you in the eye and I saw him go around the room with our, you know, producers or even our BLB producer, Darius. A couple times he like clarified, he's like, what's your name? And Darius said, you know, Darius, and he repeats it. And then when he leaves, 5 minutes later, he says bye to you by name, you know, just a high social intelligence and EQ. And from what I can gather, like as a guy that remembers names and like is personable in that way. So I'm just always impressed by people with skills like that as human beings. But very calm, had answers to everything, very smart, methodical. You know, there's not a lot in terms of giving intel on the plan or what they're doing. There's not a lot of meat on the bone yet. That can be on the meat on the Toboni yet, I'll say. How about that? That's a terrible pun and everyone should hate me for it. But I would say that, like, there's possibly two reasons for that, Tobes. One is he said, when I said, when you looked under the hood, what did you find about this department or whatever? And he's basically like, look, I haven't even opened up the hood yet. We haven't gotten there. That could actually be true. I mean, it's only been a handful of days, and maybe you don't get to do a lot of that leading up to getting this job. So he might not have a whole lot of the answers yet in terms of, do you want to move CJ Abrams to second? Do you want to shop Mackenzie Gore? Like, those teams, types of things might just – he might need a lot more time. But it's also possible that he does have some ideas. He might know already – I'm going to blow this thing up and build it up from the ground floor. And you can't tell us what you're thinking as your next manager when Miguel Cairo is still interviewing for the job. There's a right and wrong way to treat people. And I think he knows that too. So there's a lot of reasons for maybe why you wouldn't kind of give the blueprint right away. But I think where he could, he picked his spots and he gave some insight more than anything else on his paradigm and philosophies and, you know, some of the things he's going to live by as an executive, which I thought was pretty telling.
Yeah, I think he's very sharp and articulate in what he believes in, and I think he's done a good job of kind of laying out his vision. Now he's got to go execute that vision, and I think we believe that he can do that, but it's just, you know, I think when you interact with him, if you ever get that opportunity, it's just so clear that he understands people, and you don't get to this kind of a job at his age if you don't have some incredible people skills, and it's obvious just every interaction you have with him that, like you mentioned, just simple things like remembering your name and shaking your hand and looking you in the eye and just little stuff like that that doesn't seem like it really is that big of a deal and maybe isn't ultimately that big of a deal because it's ultimately going to be down to how he can draft and develop and all those things. But in terms of being a great leader for this organization, I think he's going to be fantastic at it. So I'm excited to see what he's able to do.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
The results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par with me, Maury Povich, wherever you get your podcasts.
See you later!
Here's Paul Toboni as he joined Grant and Danny live in studio on Thursday, October 9th, so you can take a listen and hear what the new president of baseball operations had to say about his ball club.
But we're very, very excited today because in studio with us here in our first hour is the new president of baseball operations. Speaking of Nationals Park, it's his domain. He's like, you know, Simba's dad looking out over the whole kingdom now. Nats Park is
everything the light touches.
His to run. Paul Taboni is in studio with us, the new president of baseball ops for the Washington Nationals on Grant and Danny. Paul, thank you for the time. We appreciate you. Welcome in studio. How are you?
Doing great, guys. Appreciate you having me on here. Thanks for having me on.
What's been the hardest part kind of getting going here? Is it, you know, moving the family? Is it, you know, meeting with everybody? Is it figuring out what stays, what goes? Like, what's been the biggest challenge?
I think you hit on one of them, right? The family piece of it. I haven't spent much time around my family lately, unfortunately. But I think the other part is just, you know, I think there's this desire to, you know, build it in a day. And when you're doing, you know, things like this, it's great and everything, but you're constantly thinking like, gosh, we got some rocks to move. And you just have to remind yourself that it's going to take a little bit of time. So
to that point, you've had the distractions of whether it's interviews like this one or all the other things that you're doing just to introduce yourself, familiarize yourself with everyone. You got a lot of people to meet. How do you feel like the process is going so far? And I'm sure you're looking forward to it, but when do you just get to the baseball part where everything else kind of falls to the side?
It's coming. Like, I feel like it's a little bit of a slow drip. Like, you just today, like, for the first time, I felt like I was getting into it a little bit. But I think you hit the nail on the head, like just meeting people, media members and obviously folks in the front office throughout the organization. That's taken up a good amount of my time over the course of the first week or so. So I think with every day that passes, I'll probably be dealing with more and more baseball stuff.
So this is obviously not professional sports, but years ago in a real person job, not like this, what we do now, but I had a new boss who came in. And I always forget, not excuse me, not forget. I always remember kind of the tenor of what she said in her first meeting. One thing I will not accept is this is how we've always done it. Now, if it's a best practice and we figure that out, great, we'll keep it. But the point is, we're not just going to do things because that's the way it was done here. But it also doesn't mean we're going to throw everything out. So the next few weeks are going to stink as we really self-scout, so to speak, and evaluate. I imagine that process is pretty similar for you. How hard is it to resist the temptation to go, I'm here because everything didn't go great and I want to fix it, but maybe there's some parts of it that were good. How do you, you know, weigh those decisions? And how hard is that?
That was actually one of the first things I said to the group, front office group and a lot of the individual conversations I had with, whether it's player development staff or scouting staff or R&D staff, like, you know, whoever it was, hey, I get it. Like a lot of the narrative out here is like, what do you want to change? Right. And that's true. Like there are going to be some things that we change. Right. But question I followed up on pretty quickly is like, what are the great things that we want to preserve too, right? And it's going to take me a while, I think, to figure out exactly what those things are within this organization, but leading on folks that I've met in the early going that can point at what some of those things are is extremely beneficial.
So give us an idea of that. And Paul Taboni, the president, baseball ops for the Nats, is on Grant and Danny. So is that Zooms? Because I imagine people in the offseason are all over the country, or do they all fly in and did you have some big meeting in an assembly somewhere I don't know about at Nats Park? Like, were you guys sitting in Section 217? Like, what were those meetings like and where were they?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's been moving a little too quick to have people flying in. I think ideally at some point in time, would love to have the whole group fly in. But it's been moving so quickly that I think, you know, it's been largely phone calls. And then for the folks that are working out of D.C., just meeting with them one-on-one, meeting with them in group settings, that sort of thing.
And so yesterday was a pretty significant day, at least publicly. We find out about some of the restructuring, some of the people that are out. Are those decisions just solo yours that you're making, or are you leaning on other people, whether it's external, internal, to help inform who stays and who goes? How's that going right now?
Yeah, and you know, they're my decision. Like, and I own the decisions, obviously. I think what you want to balance, right, is doing what you think is best for the organization, especially, you know, with the thought of where we want to go in mind, right? While also having the utmost care and respect and empathy when you have some of those conversations. It's obviously you know, a really difficult day for folks that have been with this organization for some time. And I think, like, you know, it's maybe lost in it all, right? But you can have those really tough conversations and make those really tough decisions, but also carry yourself with a lot of compassion and empathy, like I said.
And to Danny's point, there are good people and there are good things happening. I wonder, like, the importance of continuity, not just because you're finding this is a guy that if he gets away could be a GM in 6 years somewhere else, but also just institutional knowledge. Like if you clean house and just have a bunch of really smart people from Boston and the athletics organization come in here or wherever, who's going to be able to tap into what's good and what's bad? So what's that balance like for you?
Yeah, honestly, I think it circles back to what I just what I said at the start of this, which is we want to preserve what we do really well, right? And we also want to preserve a lot of the institutional knowledge, as you said, Grant. Like we want to preserve a lot of that, while also, you know, you don't really know what great looks like, so to speak, unless maybe you've seen it. And that's not to say that I've necessarily seen it, but I also have a different perspective coming from the Red Sox organization, but not just working for the Red Sox organization. It's almost like I've worked for 4 or 5 different organizations, because I worked under Ben Sherrington, who's now with Pittsburgh. I worked under Dave Nombrowski, who's now with Philly. I worked under Chaim Bloom, who's and Brian O'Halloran, who Chaim is now with St. Louis. I worked under Brez, who was with Chicago, so with the Cubs. So it's almost as if I've worked for 4 or 5 different organizations. And so you're able to take, you know, the perspective gained from all those conversations I've had with those folks that I've worked under and try and fold it into what we're doing here.
What was the allure of this job, this position, this city, this market, this team that made you say, this is the right decision for me?
I think it starts with the city, to be honest. Like I said it in the presser, after the presser, my wife and I had a lot of conversation around the fact that, you know, if we were going to jump at a job like this, it was going to have to be in the right spot. And candidly, like, we had eliminated, you know, a large part of Major League Baseball teams. And
let's name them all.
And
who turned you off in each one? Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of that circled back to this city and, you know, how passionate the fan base is. I talked about it in the presser, but how deeply sports are woven into the fabric of this community. I caught a lot of heat for naming Georgetown hoops and Howard hoops and not naming Maryland hoops and American hoops. I had a great buddy that played at American.
Georgetown season ticket holder, I was fine with the list. I will tell you.
Hoops also. Just if someone went there, it'd be fun.
And then also referencing DeMatha, but not Gonzaga and some of these other schools.
You're
but,
a basketball mark, though. I could tell. Like, you love hoops.
Yeah, I love it.
So do you watch the NBA pretty religiously still, or do you even have time to do that in baseball season?
Up until probably about 5 or 6 years ago, I watched a ton of NBA games. 5 or 6 years ago, the job and just life in general got in the way of it. So now I don't follow it as closely as I would have liked, but as you've probably guessed, I'm a sucker for, you know, prep sports and college sports and all that. So
as you kind of go through this process in terms of, you know, decision making and things, what a lot of Nats fans want to know, because they just went through the last 6 years that you didn't. I mean, you weren't here, not your fault, but they want to know how long whatever this is going to take. Like, that's the question that comes up for everybody. And when we say on the radio, we're like, hey, patience, this makes sense. We're going to start a new stamp and a new organization almost. You're turning things over. The last round of rebuild, whatever you want to call it, didn't come to fruition. How long do you think this process takes before you go, this is a Paul Toboni, this is what I want. I want it like this.
I'll give you the same answer that I gave ownership, right? Which is, I don't know. And anyone that tells you they know is lying straight to your face, right? So we're not going to be concerned with that. You know, I said it the other day, like, what we're going to be concerned with is just making really good decisions day after day after day. And then, you know, we'll look up whether it's, you know, whatever, 18 months or 24 months or 3 years or 4, whatever it is, like, we'll look up and I think it'll be clear to fans along the way that we're trending in the right direction. And I'm telling you, like, when it's really time to push the chips in, I think it'll be incredibly obvious to the whole fan base.
Which makes a lot of sense. I guess specific to this offseason, though, do you already know, or what's going to inform the decision? The Reds just kind of accidentally made the playoffs at about 500, right? It wouldn't be that crazy for you guys to make a couple of moves with your core and possibly be 500. Is it an offseason where you try to do that? Or is this a situation where you look at this and you go, we got to build this thing for 3 years from now and start again? Like, how do you make that decision and when will you?
Yeah, we'll stay open-minded. And honestly, I think a lot of that is like what the market will bring you, right? And what opportunities you have. Having said that, what we want to guard against is putting in the windows and the doors before the foundation is strong, right? Like, you look at a lot of these organizations across the league, some of the best organizations that even come from small markets, right? And they've been patient and they've been really disciplined and they've built these really, really strong foundations that have played a large part in allowing them to have sustainable runs, you know, at the big league level. So that's what we want to do. And, you know, I, like I said, I think it requires patience and discipline. And we want to balance that with you know, creating a winning culture and actually competing. That's our goal, and I'm looking forward to it.
So this would be an oversimplified question, but in terms of the kind of player that you value, just thinking of something, you know, basic that a regular fan might be able to pick apart, you go, hey, that guy can steal 50 bases, or that guy can hit 30 homers. You know what I mean? Like, those sorts of attributes and things, is there a style that you'd prefer, or is it kind of wherever the market dictates, or it's just, we're going to build according to that foundation that you just talked about and then sort of supplement accordingly? Like, if you had your druthers, would you build a team that's great on defense? Would you build a team that could fly? Would you build a team that hits bombs?
Yeah.
Yes to all those?
Yeah, I'll take all of it. You know, I think like what we want to be careful of is pigeonholing ourselves where we say like, man, we want super athletic, up the middle type players that steal a ton of bags. And then you're looking at Ryan Zimmerman like, oh, we're not going to go after that guy. Right. So like we want to balance those all those things. And you know, we want to come onto value like wherever it might be. You know, what I think will stay constant through our whole roster, hopefully, is that we want folks with winning attitudes, right, that can hold themselves accountable and hold others in the clubhouse accountable. Like, that has to be the constant throughout the roster, whether you're a guy stealing bags or a guy hitting homers or a guy, you know, that walks a ton, whatever it might be. Like, you got to bring that winning culture, or you got to add to that winning culture in the clubhouse.
Paul Taboni, president of baseball ops with the Nats. Makes sense, because that was always, to me, like the shortcoming with Moneyball or whatever, is like, why shrink your talent pool? You know, why not take the best high schooler in America? If Mike Trout's staring you in the face at 25, if you're the Angels, if you're just hunting for the college guy that gets on base or what have you. What have you learned in your dive into the analytics department right now and the technology and kind of where this org is compared to where you're coming from? We've seen so many players leave, guys that I keep in touch with and talk with, either, you know, just off the record, or even just guys that have publicly come out and said things about, you won't believe how different what they have here is, or how I'm coached here. Or all of a sudden, Kyle Finnegan is throwing only, you know, his splitter constantly. Like, what are you finding when you take the hood up and look underneath right now on what's available?
Yeah, so I haven't had the opportunity to really take the...
So we have not opened the hood yet.
Yeah, we haven't opened the hood. But what I will say is, like, I talk about preserving some of the great things in the organization. I think we have a lot of great people in this organization and a lot of really smart people, especially in R&D, right, that are going to be able to really, really, really help move the ball forward in the coming months and years.
You mentioned R&D. I think a lot of us, I don't want to speak for every listener, but I know on this show, we're giddy about the possibilities of the analytics and research and development. I'm curious, just to get your insight on this, what does a really good scout look like in 2025? And how has that changed from 20 years ago where, you know, you got the cheeseburger wrappers in the back seat and you're going ballpark to ballpark? Like, you might still have the cheeseburger wrappers in the back seat, hopefully, because they're delicious.
They are
good. Like, what is the difference of a really good scout now compared to then?
Yeah, I don't know if you heard me talk about it in the presser regarding, like, the coaches that, like, understand the art of coaching, but also understand, like, technically how to really get players better, right? I'd almost draw the same parallel to scouts, right? It's like what you just mentioned, the picture that you just painted of that type scout, like, that's a huge asset. I think what you're getting at is experience, right? And they've been around the game a ton. Those are all really positive things, right? What we also want, though, is folks that are open-minded, and as the game has changed, they've really worked hard to stay with the times, and that's on us, too, right, to really pour ourselves into educating scouts on, hey, this is how the game has changed, this is what we're going to value, so on and so forth. But to me, a lot of it circles back to the expectations that we set for our scouts, right? Hey, this is what we're looking for when we evaluate, this is how we're going to evaluate it, right? And then ultimately, like, the accountability on their end to hold themselves to those expectations, right? So that can come in different shapes and sizes. But at the end of the day, I think it just circles back to quality of person and worker you are. You know, we talk about getting over yourself and putting the team before yourself, right? A lot of it circles back to that and your willingness to do so.
When it comes to players that are here, what's your timetable for going, okay, now I've got a good feel on who each guy is, right? I mean, you're in baseball, so obviously you know the names and you know that you can look up any stat that you want. But how long do you think it's going to take you to go, okay, this is what we've got, so now maybe we know this is what we need?
Unfortunately, I think it's going to take a little bit of time,
yeah.
Right? And I don't think you can really truly understand a person until you've spent a lot of hours around them, right? And, you know, with some of our players living outside of D.C., the majority of them living outside of D.C. in the offseason, I'll travel to go meet with a lot of them. But even then, like, I don't think we're going to really know, or I'm going to really know, until we get, halfway through next year, and I've spent countless hours around him. I've seen him work, all those type things. So that doesn't mean I'm not going to try, right? What I got to be intentional about is balancing that with, you know, everything else that's being thrown my way in this role.
So forgive my ignorance of this question, because I don't actually know how this works. So I understand you come in, and from a very macro level, you go, this is how we're going to scout and develop, and this is our core principles. Do you rebuild everything like to a micro level where, like, this is how I want a report written, and this is how we're going to write the report and use the report? Or is it not to that extent? Does my question make sense?
Yeah. How I would think about it is, like, you want to take, like, a, you know, really zoomed out view, right? And then, like, as time goes on, you can get more granular with your expectations, right? So at a really high level, right, like, this is what we value from a offensive standpoint, right? Maybe a year from now, it's like, hey, this is how we're going to evaluate contact skills, right? Or whatever it is. But the goal is that with every passing month, we're introducing something new, where when we look up, whether it's 6 months, 12 months, 18 months down the line, hopefully our scouts, coaches, whoever it might be, will look back at today's date and say, wow, I am such a better scout or coach or analyst after all this time because of the amount of support and education that's been poured into me.
And then just to double click on that. So, like, as an example, you're talking about offensive philosophy. Is that, like, we're looking bat to ball, you know, like when they went, you know, Willett's over Holiday at the top of the draft or whatever, it's a staying at shortstop. There's other things, but bat the ball over maybe a little swing and miss in power. Are you talking like a philosophy is hitting the ball in the air versus on the ground? You've seen as many pitches as possible, just grinding through? Because frankly, like, I don't know what the offensive philosophy has been here the last couple of years. You can't really watch a Nats game and go, oh, I know what their plan is offensively. Like, that didn't really exist to me.
Yeah, so great question. And to me, like, it should be derived from, like, what drives value in the big leagues, right?
Okay.
And I know that's kind of like a very basic way to put it, right? But what we don't want to do is, like, just go after the bat-to-ball guy. And then you look up and we've eliminated James Wood as an amateur who's a stud, right? So, you know, what we want to do is be open-minded to the profiles that we're bringing in. And you look at all these teams, like, that are in the playoffs now, like, you know, most all of them have guys that swing and miss a good amount and also guys that make a lot of contact, right? So that'll be front of mind for us. But then the second part of your question, I think it's important to know that, like, on the amateur side, I think we have to have a pretty darn good idea of the traits that we want to select on that we're not as comfortable developing, right? And then the traits that, hey, you know, we think we can develop these traits, and if we just get this, like, chassis, so to speak, into the system, right, then we can build on the different parts with all the tools and folks that we have in player development that are really good at their jobs.
That's fascinating. So, like, Connelly Early from Boston, right? So if people don't know, you guys draft him in the fifth round at a UVA, and you guys turn him into really quickly this legit prospect who's helping in the big leagues and pitching in the playoffs way before anyone thought he was going to be helpful. He's not the example necessarily, but I guess the point is, if there's something that if you knew we can find 2 miles an hour, but we're not as good at developing this, like, that might inform why a player like that's more interesting. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, so Connelly's a great example, right? Like, he's at UVA. He started out at West Point, actually, and then moved to UVA, threw a ton of strikes, right? Like, had a really good field of pitch from a young age. Velo was not great. He would tell you that himself, right? And we thought there was a lot of juice to squeeze, so to speak, on the design of his pitches, right? And so you look up, it's been a couple years now, right? And his velo's way up, right? And his pitch mix has completely changed, right? And, you know, it's easy to look at it now, like, oh, wow, this guy's made this great transformation. But really what it was is, like, you're taking, you know, bite-sized pieces out of the apple, and you set out these development goals for Connelly, call it in the first 3 months, right? And then you achieve that, and then you move on to the next one, achieve that, move on to the next one, you achieve that. And then before you know it, he's got 5 pitches and he's sitting whatever 93, 94, 95, and he's a different animal than he was at UVA.
And now he looks nothing like a fifth round pick.
You know, yeah, right. Not going, anymore, yeah.
How that he's different than he was then.
Indeed. What was your impression outside looking in of the talent that's already here, that's under contract, some of the young building blocks?
It's what I told a lot of these guys over the phone and over text, which is I think we have a number of young players that are already really good, right? But I'm hoping that there's another gear in them. And when I look at them, I feel that. I genuinely feel that. So that's without me really getting to know a lot of them as people. I knew a lot of them as amateur players. But I'm excited about the potential that these guys have left. And I think it's worth acknowledging, like, you know, that I think really highly of them now. But I think it's even more worth acknowledging, like, I think their futures are even brighter.
It seems to me like I've talked to a couple of the guys from Boston System who, like, know you very well and think of you as a friend and whatnot. Maybe your role was different then than it is now, and so this will change. But it seems like you do have really good relationships with players as a team president. Can you still kind of maintain that, or you kind of work with the staff and the manager? And how does that work?
No, that's right up my alley. It's what I love doing. And selfishly, like, it's probably the most gratifying part of working in baseball. Like, I forget about it making us better. Like, I just love doing it. So, yeah, any of those guys were, you know, just because you brought it up, whether it's Roman or Connolly or Peyton or even guys we've traded, Kyle Teal or Chase Beideroth, I say we, the Red Sox have traded. You know, I still stay in touch with them. I think it's a great thing. And, you know, I mean it, you know, when either I'm leaving the Red Sox organization and we trade a player, if they ever want to use me as a resource going forward, I'm there to help them. Like, just because I've moved on to a different organization or they have, like, that doesn't mean that the relationship stops. Like, I want to be able to look up when I'm, you know, 85 years old and, you know, maybe retired, maybe not retired, you know, look back on those relationships and still be able to call those guys. Not all that dissimilar from, you know, a college hoops coach or something.
Paul Toboni is with us in studio, kind enough to give us a few minutes before he's got some travel coming up today. Live on your flagship home for the Nationals, Grant and Danny with you on 106.7 The Fan.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hey, Paul, it's Will Dawkins with the Washington Wizards. Congrats. We are all super excited to welcome you, your wife, and the boys to the DMV. You will soon learn that D.C. is a passionate sports town with a knowledgeable, supportive, and caring fan base. We're all pulling for you, man. Best of luck to you and the staff as you work to build out your vision. Go Nats!
Hey, Paul. This is Chris Patrick with the Caps. Welcome to D.C., and congrats, man, on an awesome opportunity for you, and I'm sure very exciting times for your family. Best fans in the world here in the DMV, and I'm sure they're very excited to have you on board and ready to see the next chapter in the Washington Nationals. So best of luck, and we'll be following you.
Hey, Paul, this is Adam Peters with the Commanders. I want to welcome you and your family to the DMV. I know you guys will love it here. It's an awesome sports town. It's great to have another Bay Area guy in town as well, man. So look forward to welcoming you. Look forward to connecting soon, man. Best of luck to you, and we'll see you soon. Go Nats.
I didn't even think about the Bay Area connection between you and Adam Peters, but he's shouting that out.
Not so bad.
There you go. All the GMs in town welcoming you to D.C., cheering on the Nats. There's good synergy between the teams, I think you'll find. Obviously, you'll have no problem getting tickets to any games, right? But we got to get you out and get you to some of these games. They'll be supporting the Nats, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited for it. I was telling my kids the other day, I grew up a big Niner fan. I knew Adam a little bit when he was with the Niners, but now we're going full send on the Commanders, so we're ready to roll.
Love that. Yeah, because they'll grow up here, right? The kids will, so they won't know anything else. I love that.
We got to get them some gear. I know they have their new Nats jersey. So what is that like? I'd imagine when you're a player and you have kids, it's very similar. But they're all Boston all the time, right? And now you're at the press conference. I'm just trying to think. We both have four very young kids. Is your oldest around six as well?
He's six, yeah.
Okay, so six and under. I'm just trying to think about, like, hey, everything I've been telling you about the Red Sox for like all these years, now it's the Nationals. That would just not go that well. It's like, how is that transition even going at this point?
Yeah, they've flipped the page quicker than I thought they
Amazing.
Would have. Yeah, so it was funny. Like, I throw BP in the street to my six-year-old, and a couple weeks ago it was like him being Alex Bregman or Trevor Story or whoever, and now it's James Wood or Dalen Lyle or Dylan Cruz or whoever. So. And that's him. That's not me. So he's flipped the script pretty quickly.
That is
that's
really awesome. Neat. In over the course of your career, I'm always curious about stuff like this. You've obviously got a lot right. That's why you're sitting in the chair that you're sitting in. What's something you got wrong, and what did you learn from it?
Man, great question. Why I'm struggling answering this, because I think there are too many things that I got wrong. I think you know, I think when you are young and probably immature, you come into the game thinking you have a lot of the answers, right? And you probably shouldn't be talking as much as you are listening, right? And there are little moments along the way that I think back and I cringe, like, God, you had no idea what you were talking about. And you were pretty quick to voice an opinion. But that's just in a general sense. I think, I think there are a number of other topics that I could hit on, but probably a little bit nuanced for the fans that are listening. So.
Paul Taboni with us on G&D. All right, so managerial search. Let's get serious for a second. What is the timeline on that search? I know there's some oddities with the baseball calendar when you can actually make announcements, but are you interviewing anyone yet, or where are we at in that?
No, so I've had conversations with Miguel and the rest of our major league staff, and as it relates to Miguel, like, I've told him that he's going to be a candidate as part of a more extensive search, and that extensive search hopefully is going to kick off here soon. And here's the deal with these managerial searches, as I've learned over the years, you want them to move really quickly, right? But you got teams in the playoffs. There's this whole permissions process with Major League Baseball, like, it usually drags on a little bit longer than you'd like. So we're going to try and move on it quickly, but I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, it takes a little bit longer than we might hope.
What are you looking for in the next manager, and is previous experience important?
I'll answer the latter half of that first. So previous experience, like, to me, it's not the end all be all, but I think it's a feather in your cap, right? It matters. Like, having gone through it before, I think helps, right? And that's not necessarily like previous experience as a major league manager, right? Like, experience can come in a number of different shapes and sizes. It can be a minor league manager. It can be a major league bench coach. It can be, you know, front office experience, right? Like, all that experience is important, obviously. What are you looking for? Like, you're probably sick of me saying this now, but I think it starts with the quality of the human being, right? And just making sure that the values that person holds sacred are the values that I hold sacred. And to me, if you get that right, and you get someone that, you know, is open-minded and humble and all those things, like, the X's and O's you can figure out, you know what I mean? So it starts there, and then you know, I think that probably takes up 70%+ of it. And then it really gets into, some of the more nuanced things, how to get the most out of, each individual on the roster, on the staff, how to create a winning culture that we're talking about, where players are holding themselves accountable and holding others accountable, those type things.
How much does the makeup of the ball club potentially influence that? In other words, let's say for the sake of argument, you got a young team where nobody's over 25 and they need to learn on the job. That screams, I need a developer here, versus a team with a bunch of guys in their mid-30s that's one last ride for it. You need a guy that's managing personalities and not turnkey necessarily, but just sort of keeping everybody happy, giving veteran days off, et cetera. How much does the makeup of the ball club kind of influence who you're looking for to lead it?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, does it matter? Yeah, it matters, and it's something in the back of my mind. At the same time, the makeup of our ball club is going to look different a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. And, my strong expectation is that this manager is going to be it. But at the same time, I do think it's something that should come into consideration.
Is your thought that in the newer school way of games are sometimes managed before they start, and then the manager's like a 21-hour-a-day managing people person? Is, like, in other words, do you plan on the front office having a lot of input on how games are managed, or are you you're the skipper, man, do your thing?
No, I think more than anything, it's like, I think it starts with like alignment from the get-go, right? Like, if you trust how the person thinks through, whether it's creating a lineup or, you know, whatever else, like making in-game decision making, like all that, like, no, that's your decision, right? That said, the same way I do in my role, right? That role, you carry a burden, right? And that burden is when you make certain moves or you have the lineup constructed a certain way, right? Like, I think you should be able to, you know, have rationale as to why, right? And the same way, you know, I should have rationale as to, you know, why we selected a player in the draft or made a free agency decision, right? That said, you do not want to create an environment where, like, a manager is worried about making a particular move because, like, he hears this voice in his ear of, like, hey, is Paul going to ask me about this, right? Like, there should be such a level of trust and built, such a great relationship where that concern isn't there. And really, it's just like full trust that the person's going to execute it in line with how you think about it. Are you going to agree on every decision? No, that's okay, though. I think that's part of the dynamic.
Paul Taboni, president baseball ops with the Nats, a couple of moments left with us on a busy day for him. This core, What attracted you about this group? I mean, James Wood has a chance to be a superstar, but there's some young talent on this team. What do you see when you look at it from outside?
Yeah, I think it's really easy to point to the on-field stuff and how great these guys are as baseball players, right? But the more I dug into it, coming into it, just seems like we have some really quality people. And it was something that we placed a huge emphasis on in Boston, just making sure that the quality of people we're bringing into the organization, players, like the amateur players, is really, really high. And because at the end of the day, like that winning culture that I'm talking about, that is going to be driven by the players, right? And if you have players that aren't in on creating that winning culture, it's going to be really tough to create it, right? On the contrary, if you get folks that are completely bought in to creating that culture, you're going to have a lot easier time doing it. So that was a big draw for me of a number of young, talented players that carry those traits.
Will you have the budget that you need to do what you want?
Yeah, like I said, you know, I'm this seat is different than the one I was sitting in the presser, but I'm in it for a reason, right? And ownership has made it clear that you know, they're going to support it, and that I'm going to feel supported. I already feel supported, and I'll say too, like that doesn't just come in the form of major league payroll, right? That comes in the form of like making sure that our infrastructure throughout the organization is in a really strong place. And like I said, I feel supported.
Could that come in the form of like a traject art machine and some other technology too, maybe?
Yeah, I know that's.
So we need to start a GoFundMe, or you like how we, yeah. Can we pull that off this year? You think
we obviously had it in Boston. I think you know, a lot of the teams in Major League Baseball have it. Unbelievable tool. It carries a lot of you know, attention for whatever reason in the media.
Here it's like the symbolic nature of like what we didn't have, right? So I think the Post did a really good story on it and was like, here's a thing the Nationals don't have that people want. And so just so you know, like it's going to come up a bunch because it's like, that's the face on, there have been a lot of years where it seems like, hey, we want some biomechanics plates and maybe eventually you get some biomechanics, you know what I mean? So yeah. Like, that's the thing right now when we hear they don't have that, it's just like, that's how you give a voice to almost like, we'd like to get with the times a little bit.
Yeah.
And obviously you're here to help do that.
Yeah. And what I would say to that is like, you know, just remove the name traject for a second, right? Like, are the dollars spent on, you know, coming onto a traject? Like, is it better to use those dollars on something like a traject or technology, you know, or some sort of player development resource like that, or in free agency, or, you know, something else, right? And that's how we're going to think through the decisions. And if like the best way to use those dollars is on a player development resource like that, like, heck yeah, let's do it.
Where will the rubber meet the road in terms of your development philosophy versus somebody maybe saying, a player maybe saying, well, this is how I've done it, right? Like, how do you, I don't want to say cookie cutter because there's a negative connotation there, but it's, this is how the Nationals do it. I mean, I remember forever ago, I'm much older than you, but you heard about the Dodger way or the Cardinal way or the Oriole way. That's how they develop prospects, period, end of story. How much is that, hey, these are non-negotiables? Versus if you've got your own way of doing plyometrics or jumping on rope ladders or whatever, you can do that, but ... draw me that that kind of parallel.
Yeah, so I have found that the wrong approach to take is shoving it down players' throats, like, hey, this is what we're doing, you better do it,
yeah.
Right? To me, the far more effective way is, once again, like pouring yourself into educating the player as to like, hey, this is what we're planning on doing. This is why we're doing it. Here's how it's going to get you a lot better. I talked about that cascading buy-in in the press conference, right? Like the buy-in just comes day after day after day because they're looking up and they're looking at their numbers or whatever it is. And we're showing them the scoreboard, so to speak. And they go from sitting 88 miles per hour to 88.5 to 89. And they're like, they get that feedback like, wow, this is working, right? And so then they double down on the type work, right? And, you know, if we do that across all spaces, like, my experience is that if we have the right people in the building and they carry the right values, they'll get to a spot where it's like there's just really good alignment because there's trust that we're caring for each other and we're looking out for each other in the process.
So what's next for you? I know you get to fly home now. You get to spend a little time with the fam, couple of days, and get back after it. Like, where are you at in kind of your schedule now?
Yeah, no, I'll still be working. It'll be good to be back in Boston for a quick minute to spend time with wife and kids.
And I'm sure your kids understand, like mine, when you're working from home, to just never to bug you.
Don't bother
come
Dad.
Over to you. Yeah. Just, we're getting some stuff done today. They're very cool about that, I bet.
Yeah. They're, especially their ages and the fact that they're boys. Like, they get it. Yeah, 6'5" and right. 3 and 1. They get it. So, no, it's about as far down the other side of the spectrum as you could imagine.
Right.
So.
But you'll be able to work from the house a little bit and keep chopping wood. Get to spend some time with them.
Yeah, you got it. And you know, I'll be on a lot of calls and just once again trying to push us forward in any way we can. So,
well, we're excited, man.
We're pumped, man.
A breath of fresh air. People are really fired up and behind you and pumped up. So best of luck to you. If you need anything over at the station, you know where to find us. We're 4 blocks away. There's some delicious places to eat lunch in the neighborhood. Danny and I have scouting reports on all of them at this point.
I'm going to take you guys up on that.
And easy to remember, we're all just named Paul, just to kind of keep it straight.
Bunch of Pauls in
just
here.
Just a bunch of Pauls.
If you need some 2080s on any of these restaurants, you let us know.
I will.
All right.
Appreciate it, guys.
That was Paul Taboni with Grant and Danny. Grant, what did you think of some of his answers? I thought, you know, like we talked about before, he's very shrewd on what he gives you. He's not going to give you too much, but I think in laying out his philosophy, you talked about it being a breath of fresh air. I think that's exactly right in terms of it's just going to be a more modernized approach. And not even to say that everything that Mike Rizzo was doing was wrong, because I think in the correct circumstance where the ownership was giving him the resources necessary, I still think that Rizzo can get it done. I don't think that what happened in 2019 was just some magical fluke. I think, you know, they were good for a decade. So I don't think that in 5 or 6 years, everything just suddenly passed him by. But I do think an updated approach with potentially the way that the ownership has worked recently, where they're not as willing to spend money on the roster, I think Taboni fits more with what the Nationals are right now than what Mike Rizzo did.
So I think that what I loved most was when he talked about players having to basically police each other and an accountability in the clubhouse, because I think it's largely lacked. And I think that's mainly started above the players, honestly. But you know, teams that have a lot of accountability don't have the same problems over and over and over and over again that the Nationals have had, running the bases and playing defense. I loved hearing that. You know, when I think it was Danny asked something to the effect of what's a Paul Taboni player look like? Is it power, speed, athleticism? And, you know, in an answer where he, you know, talked about some attributes, he basically talked about holding each other accountable as like are going to be our key player, whatever that looks like. I loved that. I also really liked when we talked about what a scout in this organization is, and he kind of said this is what a coach is as well. And he talked about like the modernization of being able to, you know, get the most out of players, help players. A lot of what he talked about came back to the players. I like that. I like a guy that is, you know, going to empower and make those guys feel happy and comfortable. That's how you win. So those are some of the things that stood out. I, you know, all of the stuff when he starts talking analytics and spending money on player development, and when he was chopping it up on Connolly early and some of the Boston guys, like, I mean, that is, you know, that's music to my ears, bro. That's the Beatles. Like, just put the earbuds in and let's rock. So I loved it. I mean, it's a really refreshing, exciting day for Nats fans. And yeah, I just hope he's very confident, it seems like, that ownership is going to give him the resources he needs. The proof's going to be in the pudding, is all I can say. I certainly hope that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about accountability being a big thing for this organization going forward. I'm thrilled that that's something that he's clearly envisioning, because, you know, it's tough. I've had a conversation with a guy that was in the front office. Just, it's tough to build that accountability when you're not able to have guys that are kind of sticking in that clubhouse year to year and having veterans that have been around. But you know, with some of these young guys, as they're going into their third and fourth and fifth years, we even saw Mackenzie Gore start to step into more of that kind of a role this season, and some of the answers he gave to the media and kind of putting pressure on his own teammates. Like, you just need more leadership and stuff like that. And I think if he can empower some of the guys in that clubhouse and say, look, we have to hold each other to a higher standard and we need to play better baseball and cleaner baseball. You know, I like hearing those things. And like we said, you know, talk is cheap, and this is all sounding awesome, and it's not like he can do anything more than talk right now. He just got onto the job, but everything in terms of the way that he has conducted himself has been fantastic. But I'm intrigued to see how he ultimately builds this thing and how he decides to put this baseball team together. And you know, we saw him in Boston be able to rise up the ranks, and then when he was put in charge of the draft, getting guys like Roman Anthony and those sorts of guys that he's able to develop then into players that you pay early and you are going to be Boston Red Sox cornerstones for the foreseeable future, and they're going to be there for a long time, and people can buy jerseys. And, you know, one thing that he talked about in his introductory press conference was, you know, getting the kids in the D.C. area to become Nationals fans because of the way they play and the fun that it is. And I just think that he understands baseball because, you know, he's obviously been in it for most of his life, but he's not that old of a guy. So he's able to kind of mix the traditional scout, which he was at one point, with the modern analytics and how the game is now played. And I think that's a good thing for this Nationals organization as they take that next step. And, you know, I was fond of Mike Rizzo. I liked what he was able to do, but I think sometimes it just runs to a point where you got to make a change. And obviously the results hadn't been there, and so they make the change, and I think they made the right decision. And I think the ownership group deserves credit on this, even though we bash them all the time for lack of spending. I think they deserve credit on this because we just assumed they were going to go path of least resistance, and they didn't do that here. And credit to them for going out and getting Paul Toboni, and from what we've seen so far, it looks like a home run.
They operated in a way for a long time that worked, and they won, and then it hadn't been as successful, obviously, in recent years. And from a player development and draft standpoint, which we've talked about ad nauseum on this podcast, the results were mixed at best over a long, long time. So trying something different makes a lot of sense. He's a 35-year-old executive. It's going to be forethinking. I am very, very excited about the future. I think Nats fans should be as well. And hopefully ownership is energized and excited and starts spending some money and really gets invested again. Because if that happens, I think this could work in a big way.
That's Grant Paulson. I'm Toby Altizer. Thank you all for listening to Bustin' Loose Baseball. We'll be back next week. We'll get into some player breakdowns as well as some off-season content, looking back at this past season as well as looking ahead to next year and some moves they need to make in the off-season. Make sure you keep it tuned to BLB all throughout the off-season as we'll react to any breaking news as well as getting you some foresight into what the 2026 season could look like as Paul Toboni now on the job and what some of the things that we expect him to do and what we hope that he can do. That's going to do it for BLB. LB, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more Nats content.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.